Welcome back, old friends, and if you're new, thanks for joining Sami and I at Down the Pit. My name is Ian, and today we have a banger of a show. This man is a myth and a legend in the TV and film industry, writing for over 45 shows. Whether you've been around since Mad TV, NCIS Miami, MTV's Pimp My Ride, Harold and Kumar, or Heels, just to name a few, you have heard Jeff Cardone's music. Please enjoy and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our show. We would like to thank our corporate sponsor, US Pave. For any and all your commercial and residential paving needs, please visit us at uspave.com. US Pave, the national paving company. Hey, Jeff. Welcome. So great to have you on the show. I got to start off by asking you, you've had such a successful world-class career so far. Do you ever sit back and wonder how life would have been like if you were an athlete?
All the time. You know, I always thought it would be the coolest job ever to be a professional basketball player or a pro football player, honestly. But yeah, I do wonder about that.
Well, because the reason why I say that, it's obvious that athleticism is in your family. Since your niece won a silver medal in the Tokyo Olympics for swimming.
That's right.
Huge congratulations, by the way.
It was unreal watching it. Yeah, I think it's the first time I cried in my whole life when she qualified. It was really cool. But yeah, now my family does not care about me at all. They just care about Emma. It's so true.
What was her discipline?
The individual medley, 400 IM. And now she's got a sister, Gracie, who's a couple years younger, who may qualify for the next Olympics. So there might be two of them next time.
Oh my God, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy, yeah.
So you didn't get that part of the genetics, or you just chose a different path?
yeah, a little of both. I did play sports, but yeah, I was not Olympic quality for sure.
So backpedaling just a little bit, you studied classical piano at age 7 before learning the drums and the guitar. Why did you quit the piano?
I didn't really quit. I more made a bargain with my parents that I would keep playing if they let me play something cooler. I did not appreciate the piano at the time. You know, I do now. I just didn't understand because no one in my family was musical or an artist or anything. So I didn't understand why they were pushing me so hard to do it. When I got, I forget, like junior high school, I said, I'll keep taking lessons if you let me get a drum set. So I got a drum set, kind of played in bands.
And they shoved you in the garage or they kept you in the house?
It was the attic in our house.
An attic, okay.
Not soundproof, by the way. Like, my neighbors must have just freaking hated living next to me growing up because it was bad.
Well, it's better than an instrument that has tones because then you sound like a dying animal.
But drums are loud.
That's true.
Yeah. And then when I first saw the movie Shine, I was traumatized, realizing that was my childhood that I didn't realize at the time. You know?
Yeah. So do you come from a musical family or were you the first one?
No. Yeah, I was the first one. I don't really understand where it came from. You know, and the irony is they forced me to play piano, but then when I was at the end of college and I said I wanted to be a musician, they thought that was the most idiotic thing they can ever hear. Yeah, I'm like, you guys started this, don't blame me.
Yeah. But was there a particular style of music you listened to as a youngster?
Yeah, honestly, it was probably just pop music of the time, FM, classic rock. I think some of the first albums I got a Queen album, Billy Joel, Glass Houses, and I got, and I'm embarrassed to say this, but like Journey, Escape when I was super young. And you know, so then you didn't have unlimited things to listen to, so you just like dissected your cassettes and just listened to the things over and over again. But I you know, that being said, on piano I was doing all the classical recitals and all that stuff, but again, I didn't really appreciate it at the time.
Well, 7 years old, I mean, who would?
Yeah. Yeah.
How many hours were you supposed to practice or did practice?
I think it was like an hour and a half in the morning before school. So I remember being up at like 6 in the morning, having to chart it on this thing. And I just never understood it.
The whole chart.
It didn't seem like there was a payoff to it all, you know, because I was just doing it to make my parents happy.
Maybe learning discipline.
Yeah. true.
No stickers? The teachers didn't give you stickers like if you accomplished a certain amount of hours in a week?
I don't remember any of that. I don't remember that it was very much positive reinforcement going on.
Yeah, gotcha. Just a lot of yelling. No, wrong you. Yeah.
I mean, this crazy thing is, you know, having young kids now, realizing how good my sight reading was then and how terrible it is now. I mean, how quickly you lose it when you don't do it every day. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, I hear you.
So what actually made you realize that you wanted a career in music? Is there a specific moment in your life that you're like, this has to be it?
I think it was more just a slow... In high school, I played in bands for fun. And then in college, I played in cover bands to make money to survive. And then when college ended, I kind of... I don't know. I felt like I lived my whole life up until that point just kind of doing what you're supposed to do. And then I got out of college and realized that I... never really thought about what I wanted to do because I was just trying to go on the path you're supposed to go on. And then I guess just through fate, I couldn't really get a real job. And so I moved to DC to play guitar. I just was obsessed with playing guitar at that point, and I wanted to make it as like a, you know, an indie rock guitar player. So that's kind of just a fluke, not being able to get a job and then just moving to the nearest big city where I knew some people. And literally when I got there, the first week, I opened the Washington City paper and you'd go in the classified ads and there was an ad for indie rock band looking for a guitar player to throw their life away in pursuit of rock and roll dream. And I called out the first week and I met some dudes who I became friends with to this day who actually are out here in LA now. That started my journey to finding kind of like-minded people that were also as insane as I was. Like, I wanted to be a musician, but I don't think I had the guts to be a musician. But then when I found those guys, I kind of got a little more courage to kind of pursue. You know, that led to like 5 years of trying to get signed in a rock band, which led to coming out to LA.
Was this Alien Crime Syndicate?
This was before that. There was a couple other bands. And then when I got to LA, I went into the back of the Recycler, which was the classified newspaper for musicians in LA. And I signed up for this. There was a guy named Barry Squire who put together bands for like touring bands when they needed musicians. So I got some auditions as a guitar player. And that's how I hooked up with Alien Crime Syndicate as lead guitar player for a little bit.
Can I backpedal just for a second?
Yeah, sorry, we skipped over a lot there.
I'm enjoying this. So you went to Penn State University, correct?
Yeah.
And you studied engineering.
Yeah.
And you graduated, right?
Yeah.
And then you moved to Washington, but you said you couldn't find a job. So what kind of engineering was this that you couldn't find a job in?
I was industrial engineering, which, again, my dad said, you're good at math, so you should be an engineer. I just never really thought it through what that meant. You know, as I was graduating, I was like, God, this is not what I want to do with my life. You know,
every parent wants their child to be like an engineering or a doctor or a lawyer.
Yeah,
like
my dad was a lawyer, and I didn't want to be a lawyer. So he's like, well, then it's medicine or engineering. And I didn't think I want to be a doctor, so...
Yeah.
But yeah, you never really think about that stuff. Like, I think our whole system is flawed in like raising people to not really think about what their life is going to be until it's too late sometimes. Like,
Well, and some kids need to go to technical school. It's okay to be a plumber, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with that. So when you were at Penn State, did you enjoy the football team?
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
I still go back to games. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, the white towels. It's very intimidating, I would say. I've never been to that stadium, but we have friends that are huge Penn State fans, and I'm sure like as an outsider going to that stadium and seeing all those white towels, it's very intimidating.
You have to experience that whiteout game one time in your life. It's amazing. I mean, 100,000 people with no masks either, so I feel like we're living in parallel universes at this point, you know? Like, no one seems like they're dropping dead at all these football games that there's a million people at, so who knows? That's a whole other story.
So moving forward to Alien Crime Syndicate, how long did that go for?
That went for me, only a couple years. It didn't work out with me trying to get signed in my other band. So, I was like, well, at least I'll be in a band that's signed. But then I realized for me as a guitar player and kind of like a mad scientist person that I was kind of just like a trained monkey in that kind of situation. You know, I was a hired gun, you know, and you don't really... you're not really that creative. They want you to play the parts that you're supposed to play. That was fun for a little bit to play some shows all over the place, but I just realized creatively that was not for me. And that's when I really started. And then so at that point, they also moved back up to Seattle, and I decided not to move to Seattle. So that's when I had to kind of come to Jesus moment where I was like, okay, what am I going to do with my life? So I decided that I wanted to try to pursue composition. So I went to UCLA and took some classes there. I knew a couple of music supervisors through my old band days and just started kind of trying to carve out a pathway to that, which took a while.
Had you composed before that?
Just writing demos for bands and stuff, but not orchestrally. So it was a big learning process. Still is.
And when did your parents finally join your bandwagon? When were they so supportive of you and not, like not telling you you have to become a lawyer or an engineer?
I'm still waiting for that day to happen. Maybe I'll start swimming.
Yeah.
No. Sally, my dad passed away a few years ago. When I got on CSI Miami and they saw my name on the screen, that's when they were like, okay, he's not the idiot we thought he was. It took many years.
Fabulous. So now that you have family, do you have any regrets living in Los Angeles? Or would you rather be in the suburbs like you grew up in?
I change my thoughts on that every day. It's a love-hate kind of place in LA. The last few years have been pretty bad. There's tent cities popping up all over the place that, you know, for the first 10 years living here, I've never saw any of that. So it's definitely changing. It's hard to kind of get a gauge on how bad it is because you don't know if it's all because of the pandemic or once a pandemic's
taxes.
Over. Yeah, I mean, the taxes. Are we going to go politics?
No.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff here, but there's a lot of good. And I kind of thrive on the griminess and the energy a little bit, you know? I mean, yes, it would be easier to take my kids and move out to the suburbs, but we lived in the valley. We lived in Studio City, and then last year we moved over the hill into the city, which no one does. So we're crazy. So yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, I appreciate it more when I leave here. You know, you get here and you're here a while and you're like, God, this place sucks. What are we doing here? It's not worth it. But then you go away and you're like, there's something about living around a lot of people that are pursuing dreams that is kind of cool, even though it's hard. I don't know. I haven't grown sick of it yet.
Yeah, I have the same relationship with New York City.
Yeah,
I've been
sure.
here for 23 years and I'm still here.
That's
and everybody tells Sami, like, when are you getting out of New York already? He doesn't listen.
Yeah, wait, 23 years? That's pretty much exactly the same amount of time I've been here. Yeah, I got here in 98, so.
That's
yeah.
when I moved here from Argentina.
So. That's, okay. Yeah, so my family's in Florida now, so I see where you're coming from, too.
Oh, what part, if you know what I'm asking?
Sarasota.
That's yeah. a nice, that's a beautiful area, actually.
Yeah, it's nice. I don't know. I feel like every time I get on a plane to get out of here, I'm relieved to get out of here, but then I miss it, and then when you're flying over it and you see the lights and you come back in, you're like, it feels like home. So I still dig it.
Sounds like you're not moving anytime soon.
Not yet.
Jeff, take us through your process for composing. Usually, it's the final step of a production. Do you feel there are boundaries with what you can compose, or you have usually like a carte blanche?
No, I mean, it's different on everyone. You like to get involved as early as you can. I feel like the longer I've been around, the more I have more of a kind of point of view and I kind of just do my thing. You know, a lot of the shows I've done recently, there hasn't been like a direction or a temp music or something. It was temped with John Williams and they wanted to sound like John Williams. It's been more I've kind of gotten to do my thing. You know, in the beginning, I feel like a lot of people were kind of just trying to survive. So we kind of sometimes have to just do our best version of what we think it's supposed to be, which unfortunately, I think a lot of times is emulating people. And I don't think I've had to do that in a long time. A lot of it is the projects I'm getting. Unfortunately, in the last few years, I've gotten a lot of comedies and I never intended on doing comedies. It's not necessarily my thing I thought I would be doing. So I still don't feel like I've achieved anything yet or gotten the projects that I want to get. So I'm still pushing every day to kind of expand as a musician and as a creator and honestly just show people what I think is the best version of me because I don't think it's out there yet.
And in terms of your process, you start with the melody for your compositions like Schubert and Mendelssohn?
I'm not even going to attempt to put myself in that conversation. But yeah, I mean, on most things, yeah, I like to sit at the piano and come up with a tune, whether it's a chord progression or something. Because I really feel like the more time you have before you start writing, you have something in your head and then you're writing, it feels like it's part of you. Like to me, there's nothing worse than you get picture on a Monday and you got to start writing on Tuesday morning. Cause I feel like you don't really have the music in your head yet. The whole process to me becomes so much easier when you have it in your head. So yeah, I always try to start at the piano. A lot of times it's with the iPhone and just putting in voice memos and just recording little fragments till I think I have something to start with, which it could be a melody. It could be, yeah, chord progression. It could be a little riff, a little ostinato, just something.
And you give yourself stars once you accomplish everything?
Ah, God, I don't know.
Or are you yelling at yourself like,
I have so many voicemails on there that I have to go through that I always intend to kind of go through and translate some of that stuff, but I just always forget.
I was more so talking about the discipline, like when you were younger and your mom was yelling at you to play the piano.
I try to block that out. Thanks for bringing that up.
So. Yeah, sorry about that.
But yeah, the process is, at this point, it's just try to bring you to a project. I think at a certain point, I don't know if it's 21 years of doing something, or at a certain point, I know what I would do on a project, and I just do that. Probably 10 years ago, I would just ask them what they wanted and, you know, and rely kind of too much on what people would say. But I think now you realize that the job is not giving them what they say they want. It's you bringing in what you think is best and starting the conversation from a creative point of view. And even if your first idea is wrong, at least where you end up is from a point of creativity, not from a point of emulation.
And you have a particular sound. I mean, you have a brand. I mean, I've listened to a lot of your music, and I gotta say it, we know it's you. Just like you know it's John Williams.
Thank you. I guess inadvertently, after so many years, maybe I do. I mean, I definitely feel like I have an approach to something that I don't know when that I started having enough guts to have that approach.
How would you describe your music?
I don't know. Sometimes I think it's kind of retro, kind of throwbacky. I use a lot of acoustic instruments. You know, I'm not particularly in love with synths and electronica, so I tend to gravitate towards a lot of acoustic sounds. I try to have something real on everything I do. I mean, everything around my studio, I'm just looking, I have just guitars, upright bass, piano, drums, Mellotron, which is my favorite thing ever, some vibes. I just gravitate towards acoustic sounds and simplicity, I think. Which is ironic, you know, because some of my first big gigs, you know, with CSI Miami was like a very electronic action show every week. Yeah. But somehow, I don't know. I'm not doing that right now. I think my favorite thing to do is to go for the emotions, to, in a non-melodramatic way, heighten the emotions. I think that's kind of my favorite thing to do and what I'm kind of good at. I thought Kaminsky Method, I got to do that a lot, which is kind of fun.
So do you work on one project at a time, or you usually have a few overlapping?
Yeah, it's usually overlapping. I don't say no to too much because I'm just terrified that the phone will never ring again. So I kind of just, you know, take it as it comes and just hope that I can do it. I'm also a freak in that I'm not a team composer. I don't have an army of minions. I mean, every note is me, for better or for worse.
Writers.
No ghostwriters. I've got a music editor and I've got an engineer who mixes everything. But I read everything because I play so many live instruments. I just don't know how I would have someone else do that. And not saying someone else couldn't do it better, but, you know, I think a lot of my sound is playing instruments not so good a lot of times. You know, I like the off notes. I like the noises. I like the imperfections.
Yeah.
I like when you listen to a classic rock, when you listen to a Led Zeppelin song or something, you don't listen to the perfection. You listen to that weird guitar squeak you hear, or the noises that aren't perfect. I find that's what makes something have repeat listening value. So I try to leave a lot of imperfections in the stuff I do, because I just find it makes it more interesting. Because I feel like these days, with so many people writing on computer and with samples and everyone has the same sound, I mean, I think it's really easy to fall into the rut of just sounding the same, sounding homogenous. Once I got the point of not worrying if I could pay the rent the next month or eat, once you got a level of financial wherewithal to not be worried about all that, then I find that I want to do things because I want to do them, you know, artistically, not because I need it to make money. So I think it changes the way you approach things. I'll come in with a point of view on the score, and if it doesn't work and we part ways, that's okay. I'd rather do that than knock off their temp score that they want that they can't afford. You know, that's just no interest to me.
You also use many unique instruments, such as bowed xylophones and bowed saws.
Yeah.
And auto harps. How did you gravitate towards those particular sounds?
Again, I think it's just my mentality of trying to put something real on every track, you know, and something unidentifiable. So, yeah, I mean, you just put a bow on anything and it sounds kind of cool.
That's what I tell Sami all the time. Zinger.
Yeah, but like I do it horribly, but that's what makes it sound cool. Like, the saw, I did a movie, God, it's been quite a few years now, this movie called The Vicious Kind, which really the director suggested that sound. He also kind of changed my life because I met Lee and we did this movie, and through him, I met my wife. And now Lee got too big, so I haven't worked with him in a few years. But we did on that movie. I forget how the idea came up. He mentioned The Saw. So I wasn't too familiar with it, but then I went down this rabbit hole and we found some people to play it. And it just was this whole kind of discovery of just getting these sounds that weren't just perfectly in tune and just having elements in your music that are kind of just off a little bit. And I found that pairing that with the things that are perfectly in tune, it just gives things life and interest.
Things are too perfect now on the radio. It's just, I'm
with
you.
Yeah. I mean, pop music, my girls love pop music, and it all just sounds, I don't want to sound old, because no, there's great new songs too, but there's just like a standard of production where everything is kind of coming from the same place. And yeah, I mean, like, I have live drums in my studio and I do not try to make them sound good, you know, because like there's enough, everyone could get the samples of the super perfect, you know, Stephen Slate drums. Mine are the Jeff Cardone crappy snare hasn't been tuned in 12 years. And
garage sale drums.
Yeah. But to me, that's where the cool stuff is in the imperfections.
So, I totally agree.
I mean, on some of my movie stuff, you'd be shocked at some of the stuff that makes it in. Like, there, almost everything is a first take on guitar and drums. I mean, I just let it, I don't know. I don't overthink it too much.
I think that's a perfect strategy to making all your deadlines, right?
Well, yeah, that makes it easier too. <yeah. laughs>
This because is you're true. On your own, you're working on your own, you don't like to have your army, you said, and I'm sure meeting deadlines is a huge thing in the business.
Well, but also I think a lot of times your first instinct is the best. You know, if you're on version 20 of something, there's something wrong. Usually you need a different approach. 9 times out of 10, the first approach is, even in the last couple of years, like all the movies I've done or the show, like the theme that ends up being in the show is almost every time been literally the first thing I came up with. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a great life lesson also. Trust your gut.
Yeah, exactly. It took a long time to realize that, but yeah. And I think that's what people are paying you for. That's why they're hiring you. Not for them to tell you what to do, but for you to come up with something. Surprise them.
Perfect. So we're going to move on to our first espresso section. And this is just the first word or words that come to your mind. Are you ready, Jeff?
Let's do it.
Favorite instrument to write for?
Strings.
Favorite food?
Sushi.
Favorite restaurant?
Little Dom's.
I think I've eaten there. Is that in L.A.?
Yeah, it's in Los Feliz. I was just there last weekend. That's why it came to mind.
Awesome. Favorite conductor?
John Williams.
Favorite movie producer?
Barry Levinson.
Favorite TV producer?
Jerry Bruckheimer.
Favorite rock band?
Radiohead.
Favorite drummer?
Stuart Copeland.
Favorite guitarist?
Eddie Van Halen.
Favorite album? Doesn't have to be yours.
The score to The Mission.
Favorite TV series?
The Wire.
Favorite movie?
Close Encounters.
Favorite actress?
Judi Dench.
Favorite composer, alive and not?
Danny Elfman.
And somebody that's not alive?
Jerry Goldsmith.
Favorite hobby?
Tennis.
Favorite cartoon when you were a kid?
I'm so old I don't remember. Flintstones.
Favorite place to visit?
Europe.
Favorite animal?
Dog.
Favorite politician?
Wow. Can I say no one?
Yeah, you can say that.
Barack Obama.
Favorite alcoholic beverage?
Guinness.
And last but not least, a useless talent that you have?
I can probably name every member of any 80s hair band.
And there it is.
Cool.
Yeah, that was good. So Jeff, in the industry, you usually need a lucky break or some kind of connection sometimes when you don't expect it. What's yours?
I'm still waiting for it. No. No. Yeah, I mean, my biggest break was when I got the show CSI Miami back in 2003. So at that point, I was kicking around here for about 5 years trying to make a go of this thing. And I was about ready to leave town. I was broke, ready to go. I just wasn't happening. I was living in a hotel down by the LAX next door to a strip club. It was not the place you want to be living.
It wasn't the dream?
No. It was pretty much the harsh reality of you failing miserably. But during that same time, I had a friend who was a music supervisor. He had an office in Santa Monica. He said, there's a studio that opened next door to us and you should rent it because you might meet some cool people. And I was, you know, broke. But I borrowed some money to rent this place for a few months. And that led to me scoring a short film for like the AD on CSI. So this music supervisor was working on the original CSI. Fast forward a couple other months, they were doing CSI Miami. They're making a change from the original composer, who's amazing, Graham Revell. They asked me if I wanted to demo, and I said, there's no way in hell they're going to go from Graham Revell to me. But, you know, a fluky thing happened. I got to demo a whole episode. I think they watched them without names or something, and somehow they picked me out of the hat. And that changed my life.
Phenomenal. So, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I was in the Denny's parking lot by the strip club at the airport the next day after the demo, and I got the call, and I will remember that moment for the rest of my life, because I was about to leave. And I remember the next morning I could go to Starbucks and be like, it's okay to drop $4 on a coffee. It's going to, you know, like, you're going to make
it. And tip them, right? And give them a nice tip.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was a life changer for me. You have lucky breaks. There's plenty of unlucky breaks along the way that we all deal with, but that's just part of the game.
Yep.
And you borrowed money to make this happen. You went after the lucky break.
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, when you're that far in, I just didn't have a plan B at that point, you know? That's the thing. I think at a certain point, you just got to go all in and not play it safe. Like the first few years, you know, when you're in your 20s and everyone else you know growing up starts getting real jobs and starts making money and having real lives, and you're approaching 30 and still going after your dream, it gets hard. I was just too far gone along the path to do anything else. So I had nowhere to go but just keep trying. So thank God.
Yeah, I'm sure girlfriends were not happy with you.
Oh, God. Yeah, no one's happy.
Your mom, everybody. When are you getting a real job, right?
I was always kind of pretty straight-laced growing up and did the right thing and, you know, never really pushed the boundaries too much. So for me to take in chances like this, it was kind of out of my character. Yeah. Again, thank God.
For a second, I thought you were making a script out of this. You were like, I'm living in a van by the river. I was like, oh, we got Chris Farley going on here.
No. I mean, it's crazy. Looking back, I still can't believe all that stuff went my way. You know, like, it never does. So,
yeah, meant to be, they say, you know? Yeah. And I love that you didn't have a plan B. That's the way to do it. A lot of people play it safe. Then they like their job, their 9-to-5 jobs, which is fine, too.
Yeah, you know? Nothing wrong with that, you know?
No.
At all. I was always kind of envious when I saw people that I went to school with, and they just were happy with where they were in life, you know? Like, and I was always like, God, that must be kind of cool to be at peace with just being content. Yeah. I don't think I've ever been content yet.
You know? Comfortable, yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
We hope you've been enjoying part one of our conversation with film composer Jeff Cardoni. Before we go, we want to leave you with a little sample, a little taste of his music. This is Drawn to the Light from his album released in 2020 called Nuovo Futuro. Also, please visit our brand new website, downthepit.com, where you can find ways to listen to all our episodes, find ways to contact us, support us, and follow us on social media. Thanks for listening. Happy holidays, and until next time.
Thanks so much for sticking around until the end and allowing us to be a part of your day. We don't have all the solutions to the world's problems, but classical music for sure can help solve a few of them. Please follow us on social media, and we cannot wait for you to join us next time.